Welcome to From an Enfield Poet with me, Anthony Fisher. There will be a series of podcasts on poets, poetry, history and industry, most of which will have a connection with Enfield. All interesting topics for me that I hope will be of interest to you. Episode 1, Women in Industry.
Enfield Industries podcast is supported by the Arts Council Place Partnership Initiative and administered by Enfield Council.
Tales of Enfield Industry looks at the manufacturing industry that grew up in Enfield. I'm Anthony Fisher and I've been making cleaning chemicals in Brimsdown since 1964. Join me for this four-part podcast series, hearing from people who have worked in the companies that grew up in the Enfield area.
I have to say it's a job that I was most unsuited for because it was working in the laboratory and it was as a tester for the new products, and my capacity to do anything involving equipment or science is actually minus figures.
The management refused to do that, so the women decided to agree to doing a work to rule.
I dropped my pliers on the floor. I said to him, pick it up for me. It was only thorn.
In episode one, we hear anecdotes and stories from women who worked in industry. From the rag trade to technology, from the conveyor belt to the office, and discover the heritage that provided work for thousands in Enfield.
An Anthony Fisher production, engineered by Maroon Community Media, celebrating Enfield's Festival
Ladies and
of
gentlemen,
Industry.
Workers, playtime!
East of Silver Street, a former workhouse was occupied in 1926 by the Klinger Manufacturing Company. Renowned for the manufacture of socks and stockings, it employed over 1,800 staff by 1941. Irene Richards tells us about her memories as a child in 1945 of Klinger's.
Going into the place, which, you know, had all these sort of, it was cavernous, the whole place, full of machines. One of the things that stuck in my memory very, very clearly was what I would call the taste and smell of steel or metal having been, you know, when you chamfer, you steel an oil mix, that smell and that, I could taste it, has stuck with me all my life. I can still imagine this, and this is sort of 80 years later, I can still feel this. And the fact that it was sort of dark, but it was Christmas and they'd put all the decorations up that they could find in a time of austerity. All the children of all the people who were working there got a stocking, which, because it was, you know, it probably hadn't made specially for the children, and how many children were there, I've no idea. And anyway, we sat down and we had something to eat, you know, sort of usually jelly and cake and whatever. And I am pretty certain that we were shown a film too. I think we had, I suppose I was, I'd been to a couple of Christmases there, because he had another Christmas one after I was 11, and I'd gone to Latimer. That would have been in the 30, that would have been 40, 45. My father, my mother, both worked for Klinger's. There was another uncle, two uncles. Their wives, they all worked at Klinger's. And they were not, they were very typical of the people around there. I would say that probably, it gave employment probably to goodness knows how many people. Dad was a mechanic, so he did all the machinery around and about. My mother did a job, stockings which were not quite perfect, weren't thrown away, or disposed of in some other way. They were given to this small group of women. I don't know, I think they were called something like scratchers or, I don't know, tearers or rippers or whatever it is. They used to put them the stocking on a form and they would literally do this with some instrument that they had and they would take out the faults. There'd be a perfect stocking, so they didn't waste it. Let's say, I'm sure...
Is it stockings or socks?
Stockings. And of course, stockings were very valuable. They were sort of currency to some extent. And that was the days when they had a seam down the back, you know, which you always had to get straight when you put it on, otherwise you felt, you know, that you hadn't got it on right. My father knew old man Klinger very, very well indeed. And he was extremely kind to us as a family. When Dad got TB, he used to slip the odd fibre and so on to my mother, who continued working there.
Klinger sold the former site in 1967. Irene then found many casual jobs and working for one of Enfield's biggest companies.
The other place I worked was British Oxygen. My principal job there was converting from Imperial to metric. All of their books, you know, and they made all sorts of screws and things. Everything that was in the Imperial had to be converted to metric. And they gave me a shed, which was, you know, about five times the size of this house, with tables. I was given the Imperial measurements, and I had to work through every page, converting every single thing into a metric measurement.
Using a calculator?
I think I had a very primitive thing that helped me out on it, but I also had a book which had an immediate, you know, so it was very, very hard work, and concentrated work, because I couldn't afford to make a mistake.
For many women, juggling work and family for extra income was a way of life. Becky Coleman worked at the Ford subsidiary Autolite in the late 60s.
Yes, they were evening jobs. It was 5:15 until 10 o'clock, which was really difficult hours. I'd get children. I'd already got two children. It was really hard to find someone to look after the kids.
So when was this?
In 69. We were saving up to buy our own house, and one of them was at Autolites, which was part of Ford's. They made different parts for different engines. You had to wire them with very, very fine wire, but the machine did it for you. You just put the wire on the end of this item, which I can't remember the name of, and just switched it on and it went. But you had to sit there and watch, because the wire was very fine and used to break. So we had two men, and you had to come along and fix it for you. I don't know, I think they just stranded it together. I don't think they put a new one on. I think they just twisted it together, which probably all of the women could have done themselves. And then they went on to another place where a woman put a sort of stud thing on each end. There's two thick wires, one at each end. Then they were baked, oven. I don't know why, but they were baked. So a couple of the women used to wait till the charges had gone off of there. They'd go round and they'd pick a couple of ones that were already baked and put on their, if they were a bit behind in their number, you'd have got into trouble if you didn't do your number. So, but it was good companionship and a laugh. I mean, you really, really had a good laugh.
And you made these wired, like it sounds like a transformer of some sort, you wired up.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing you made there,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, there's other jobs, but you got given a job and you stayed there.
Yeah.
Coil.
Coil, yeah.
The coil we used to make, yes, the coil.
You say you were amongst women there. Were a lot of blokes?
No, on the bits we did weren't. But they did a night shift, blokes came on. In those days, women weren't allowed to do a night shift unless they were nurses and doctors and things like that. So they used to come on, you know, just before 10 o'clock. And one of the men, made I don't know what was said, but he said something to one of the women. And her friend slapped him round the face. She got the sack because she hit someone, and she got the sack.
Because the man had made unnecessary...
Well, someone saw her, you see.
Yeah.
You know, simple as that. Someone saw her. And Ford's very strict about some things, and that was one of them.
Unfortunately, it's too typical. But how were relationships between the female and the male workforce?
In Ultralight, a lot of the men, the charge hands and the managers, seemed to have a girlfriend amongst the women. They had to get there early, really early, and then they'd go to the canteen and they'd sit there with her. Where anything else happened, I've no idea. But, I mean, they're all married women.
There can be no doubt that this afternoon we are witnessing another historic advance in the struggle against discrimination in our society, this time against discrimination on grounds of sex. In introducing the bill, I hope there will be no difference between the two sides of the House about the principle.
The Equal Pay Act 1970, under the stewardship of the iconic Barbara Castle, and the Sex Discrimination Act 1975, were designed by Labour governments to provide equality in the workplace for women. There is no doubt women found it a challenge in the workplace.
My name is Valerie Fisher. I'm also known as Valerie Darville, which is my maiden name. I went to Belling and Lee on the Cambridge Road, one of the many factories closed by Mrs. Thatcher. They made components, printed circuit boards, things like that. I was in the sales office, which I quite liked. And I had more social life there. There were a lot of boys there that were apprentices, and I got to know people. And then this awful bloke joined the sales team, really obnoxious, who decided he was in charge of me, although he wasn't, and was constantly harrying me. And I got fed up with that and left. I think after Belling and Lee, I was out of work for a few weeks. But about that time, I got involved with some, you know, very undesirable type. And I became pregnant, and I didn't want to get a job in an office because I would have to confess to people. So I went and got the most stupid thing I've ever done in my life. I went and got a job in Barton's Bakery in Enfield Town, working in a shop, standing on my feet all day. When I got married, and then I got the sack because I was pregnant. They wouldn't insure pregnant women, so he was got the sack. It ended badly. I'd ended in the antenatal ward. They said I'd been overworked with oedema.
Like many women in Enfield, Mary Duggan needed extra income and found part-time work in the electronics industry at Ferguson's, originally a US company but renowned for the manufacture of TVs. She tells us about her experiences.
But I needed work, so I got the job to do evening work at Ferguson's, and that was line assembly work for circuit board, so it was putting in various things, yeah. And there were line belts of about...
Did you solder them at all?
10, yes, I did soldering. I did soldering. I'm, for one strange reason or another, if you know my personality, I was promoted. I don't know whether that was to keep me away from trouble or not, but I also, the women asked me to be a shop steward there as well. So we had a very, what we considered a serious welfare stroke work scenario that we needed the women to have put in place by the management, who refused to do that. So there was, with the support of the trade unions, a work to rule put in place by the women. And we had 600 women working on assembly lines and other operatives, but predominantly male charge hands, male factory manager. And they were quite autocratic. They did allow us to earn money because we had families to support, or very young children to support, 6 to 10 shift. So we got home, you know, I was a breastfeeding mother, so I'd run home to feed my baby, you know, run home, well, get the bath, or, yeah. But and cold nights, you know, and men would wait at the gates to pick up the children so that women could go into work at 6 o'clock. You know, it would be a switch, a transfer. So it's very important that women were able to negotiate that.
So the women would go to the gate with the children?
The fathers would get come by and pick the children up often. Mm-hmm. Not always. I mean, I managed to get a baby mind just for the hour or so when my ex-partner could pick up my firstborn. But not always, and that's hence, that was why we had eventually this work to rule. Cash tells to pay us on Fridays, weekly paid on Friday, collect your money. And this would have meant that the women could give their babies over, could come in, they could clock on and get their money upstairs, rather than having to allow time to queue for their money downstairs. There was the opportunity upstairs, they just weren't doing it at hand.
Warwick, so 600 women is a lot, but you managed to get the doors open upstairs.
Well, we were refused. And this would have meant that women didn't have to queue downstairs. It meant time on their side so that they could give their babies over and get in. And they were queuing and then signing on, so they were allowing time to queue, get their money downstairs, 600 women, whereas it could have been 300 and 300, queuing or getting their money. And the management refused to do that.
So did you win in the end?
Of course, they were sacked. The manager and the charge hand were sacked.
The girls at the bench, Stayflex, Clavering Industrial Estate, Edmonton, N9, 1968-69. We four were the girls at the bench, perched on high stools around a long bench in the research and development lab, between the offices for the technologists and admin staff, and a vast room with industrial washing and pressing machines. It was a light and airy space on top of the factory's dark, satanic mills.
Enfield poet Christine Vile worked at Stayflex. The company was at the cutting edge of the fashion industry and met the demands of the booming 60s.
The motto of Berlin designer Stayflex, which manufactured iron-on interlinings, that's the fabric that you use in collars and cuffs and lapels and so on to stiffen them. They had a factory in the Clavering Estate. Now, the reason I went to work there was very simple. It was really near my house. We were living on the council estate at the bottom of Bounces Road, and you could walk to this place in about sort of 10 minutes or something, because to earn some money. And it was really near, so that sounded convenient. I have to say, it's a job that I was most unsuited for, because it was working in the laboratory where they were, the R&D laboratory, research and design, and it was as a tester for the new products. And my capacity to do anything involving equipment or science is actually minus figures. What was nice is, though, the other women who worked there were brilliant. It was just such a great atmosphere. And I can remember them all very vividly. There was Rose, who was an older woman, and she was a real local Edmontonian. She was a grandmother, I don't know how, but she had grandchildren, I know, and she lived just round the corner. So a bit like me, she was there because it was near. And then there was Dorothy, who was an older woman who'd taken early retirement, and this was like a job to top up her pension. And then there was Una, who was Dutch. She was Dutch and she'd married an English guy, Peter, who she called Peter. And we were very disparate. I mean, I was probably 19. All very different, all got on really well. Huge laugh, lots of fun, lots of socialising, kept in touch after.
Working in the late 60s, Christine moved on to Reeves, a renowned manufacturer of materials for artists. Her job also symbolised the beginning of an era that dominates our society today, namely digitalisation and the first use of computer systems.
At Reeves, I was working in a section of the sales department, and what we were doing is we were putting orders onto cards for the mainframe computer, the punch cards. I feel at times I'm like an what I've lived through in history. Yet the giant mainframe computer that was obviously in its giant, huge, separate room that had to be kept chilled because otherwise it didn't work, and men in white coats would sort of be in and out of this room doing who knows what because we weren't allowed obviously anywhere near it. So what we did was when the orders came in, mostly on forms, people would send in, obviously so there would be order forms, people ordered by phone as well, and we would write that down. I think there was both. But specifically, we had to translate the order onto the punch cards so that they could then be inputted into the giant mainframe computer that we knew of but weren't allowed to have anything to do with.
Women played a vital part in Enfield industry, be it in clothing, manufacturing, electronics and other service industries. They worked hard to balance their lives and their families and had to fight hard for equal conditions. One of the most well-known companies in our area was the electronics company Thorns, led by the illustrious Jules Thorne. We finish with Stella McDonald telling us about her job in Thorns and a very interesting encounter.
I was on the line, as usual. I was wiring and soldering.
So you're very nimble with your hands.
I was then.
With your eye.
Yeah.
And so when you were working on television, that would have been with Thorns, wouldn't it?
It's when we had the line. And the end was the finished product. You all had your own bit, and it was passed along the line.
Did you always work on the same bit, or did you change?
No, sometimes. It depends on what kind of set was being done, you know. I was working one day, and we had, you know, they had visitors come round, and this man was standing at the side of me. Dropped my pliers on the floor. I said to him, pick it up for me. It was only Thorn. And they laughed, they thought. After we'd gone by, they said, did you know who that was? I said, no. Who was it? Only a visitor. That was Thorn. He just picked him up and gave him to me.
Anthony Fisher production, engineered by Maroon Community Media, celebrating Enfield's Festival of Industry.
That's all from this episode of From an Enfield Poet. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you'll join me for the next episode. Thank you.